welcome to the session on advancing the measurement of sense of coherence. And my name is Sylvia Lisman-Brocia, or Sylvia Brocia, and I work at the University, at the Helmut Schmidt University in Hamburg, Germany, as a postdoc researcher. And I'm moderating this session together with Shauna Rohner, who is a clinical psychologist and also a postdoc at the University of Zurich. And we are hearing presentations in this oral session from Igor Portuguese, from Clara Tarko, and from Craig Becker. And I will give, they will all have an opportunity to present themselves as they start with their presentation, since they can best talk a little bit about themselves and their connection to salutogenesis. And we will have four live presentations as well as one pre-recorded presentation from Craig, but Craig is with us in this session as well, so he will also be around to answer any questions that you may have. So all of the presenters are live in this session as well. We will keep the presentations to a maximum of 10 minutes each. And the plan was, and let's see how we want to roll with this. The plan was to have 4 to 5 minutes after each presentation. So shall we now just collapse that towards the end? So we will just collect. So please note your questions. You can also write them in the chat, which Shauna is monitoring. And then we can just discuss all of the questions and have a nice debate at the end of all five presentations. Shauna, do you just want to briefly introduce yourself as well?
I think I'm first anyway in the session, so I'll just do it then. But my name is Shauna Rohner, and from Zurich, but only working, I'm actually Irish. And I'm going to be moderating the questions. So yeah, please, you can, of course, keep your questions to the end yourself or put them in the chat and I will collect them. And we'll try to get through as many as possible as we can at the end. You'll see me in the first presentation when we get started.
Excellent. Thank you, Shauna. And we were informed that there is supposed to be a translation feature for those who would prefer a Spanish translation. Now, for those to whom this applies, they may have already had some experience with this in earlier sessions today, in which case maybe you know how to access this, because I am personally not seeing this feature at the time being. So I'm unfortunately thinking that this may not currently be available. But we'll have all of our presentations in English. And then for internet bandwidth reasons, we would like you to keep, predominantly if you're not presenting, keep your cameras off while we're listening. And then it's suggested, recommended that you turn your cameras on, of course, when we have the discussion, which will also be easier if we just have the entire discussion towards the end, and then we can switch over to turning our cameras on. So yeah, I think this gave us a little introduction, and we also have a good audience ready to listen to our research. And so Shauna, I'll hand over to you for your first presentation.
Thank you. As the technical person, watch me now have problems share my own. Can you all see my screen? Yes, perfect. I realize I'm first, I need to timekeep myself. Okay. So welcome all from my side as well. Like I said, my name is Shauna Rohner. I'm a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Zurich in the Division of Psychopathology and Clinical Intervention. And today I'm going to tell you a little bit about our study on the validation of a relatively new conceptualization and measurement of sense of coherence in an older adult sample. Here we go. So sense of coherence revised, or SOC-OR, refers to a recently revised version of Antonovsky's sense of coherence. The concept and instrument was revised by Bachem and Merker in 2016 to address psychometric inconsistencies in the original scale, for instance, regarding factor structure or external validity. The revised sense of coherence concept was defined as the ability to integrate and balance positive and negative appraisals of life experiences in order to maintain health and well-being. Similar to the original sense of coherence, the SOC-OR scale yields a total score and is comprised of three theoretical dimensions, which are manageability, which is the ability to come to terms with and deal with difficult situations, balance, defined as the ability to balance positive and negative experiences and feelings, and reflection, which is the ability to take different perspectives or understand connections to the wider context. Similar to the original sense of coherence, the following theoretical assumptions were proposed to underpin the SOCR concept. SOCR is proposed to develop within the context of difficult life experiences, so it is shaped by the successfully overcoming of adversities. It develops in early life and is then assumed to remain stable in later life. It's proposed to be resistant to change once developed, with only minor fluctuations in response to major life events. Individuals with a strong SOCR are proposed to be better able to identify and use appropriate resources to overcome adversity and maintain their health and well-being. The existing research so far supports SOCR as an indicator of stress-related resilience and health maintenance. For example, a cross-national study on bereavement in Switzerland and China showed that a stronger SOCR was associated with higher levels of post-traumatic growth. In addition, a recent nationwide study in Germany found that SOCR was associated with lower levels of depression in relation to cumulative lifetime traumatic events and childhood neglect. However, while this preliminary research is promising, the SOCR scale has mainly been validated and examined in middle-aged samples, and there was no research focusing on SOCR in older adults. So this brings us to our study, the current study I present today. So the aim of this research was to evaluate the psychometric properties and theoretical assumptions of SOCR in an older adult sample. Regarding the methods, the study involved a cross-sectional quantitative assessment on the topics of early life adversity, resilience and coping resources, and health and well-being. Participants were Swiss older adults, and the analysis involved assessment of the psychometric properties and theoretical assumptions. For the psychometric properties, confirmatory factor analysis was used to assess the proposed factor structure for SOCR. Internal consistency was also examined, and convergent and discriminant validity was assessed in relation to a large range of psychological concepts. For the theoretical assumptions, age difference in SOCR were examined, and a moderation analysis assessed the assumption of a strong SOCR in relation to early life adversity and mental health. The final sample consisted of 268 Swiss older adults aged between 50 and 92 years, with a mean age of 67, and the sample was approximately 71% female. So first, taking a look at the psychometric properties, the proposed factor structure was supported with confirmatory factor analysis indicating good model fit for a second order three-factor model of SOCR with first order factors of manageability, balance, and reflection. Satisfactory convergent discriminant validity was also shown using a correlation matrix with other related psychological constructs. Small to moderate correlations were observed. So there was a lot more than I present here in the matrix, but for example, small to moderate correlations were seen with optimism, self-esteem, negative effect, and neuroticism. So this would suggest that the SOCR scale is sufficiently distinct from established psychological and psychopathological constructs. Internal consistency was examined using Cronbach's alpha, which suggested acceptable reliability for the SOCR scale. Now moving to the theoretical assumption, starting with SOCR in later life. So with the original sense of coherence, cross-sectional mean comparison studies would sometimes find that older age groups showed the highest mean scores in comparison to younger ages. So in the current older adult sample, it was expected that SOCR should not differ significantly between two older age groups. SOCR means were compared between a late middle age group and an older age group, and results showed no significant differences in mean SOCR between the groups. Although, of course, this is a cross-sectional mean comparison and longitudinal evidence would be best, these results provide initial evidence on SOCR in older age groups. Now looking at the second theoretical assumption on a strong SOCR. As SOCR is proposed to develop early in life and it's shaped through the overcoming of difficult life experiences, moderation analysis examined SOCR in the association between early life adversity and mental health. Using the childhood trauma questionnaire, five types of early life adversity were examined: emotional, physical, and sexual abuse, as well as emotional and physical neglect. Results showed that SOCR significantly moderated the relationship between emotional neglect and mental health. However, this wasn't found for the other four types of early life adversity. If we take a look at the moderation graph here on the right, we can see that individuals with a strong sense of SOCR, which is here in the red, showed better mental health scores than those with weaker SOCR, even at high levels of emotional neglect, which would suggest a buffering effect. A regions of significance analysis supported this buffering effect, as at low and average levels of SOCR, a significant negative relationship was observed between emotional neglect and mental health. However, at high levels of SOCR, a non-significant negative relationship was observed. This provides initial support for the assumption of a strong SOCR being beneficial in that it might buffer the negative relationship between early adversity of emotional neglect and mental health. This study was the first evaluation of SOCR in an older adult sample and provides preliminary support for the psychometric properties and theoretical assumptions. Since this research, further support has come from additional studies, such as a validation study in a nationally representative sample and a longitudinal study with older adults. Interestingly, in both of these studies, where early life adversity was assessed, significant results were also observed in relation to childhood neglect, as in the current study. As all of these studies examined samples from the general population, one explanation may be the chronicity of early life adversities, with relatively low occurrences of certain adversities, for example, sexual abuse, in comparison to emotional neglect. Which brings me to the next steps for SOCR. It may be interesting to examine SOCR in relation to different types of stress or adversities and in adversity-specific samples such as sexual abuse survivors. This might provide greater insight into the role of SOCR in adverse situations. In addition, the current sample had a greater proportion of female participants and an overall high level of education. So future research should aim to replicate this study with more equal distribution of gender and education. Furthermore, as SOCR is proposed to develop through difficult life experiences, it may also be useful to examine it as a mediator in the relationship between adversity and health. And of course, something that must be considered is the cross-sectional nature of the current study and that causal inferences can't be made. So an important next step is, of course, prospective longitudinal studies, which can also evaluate the test-retest reliability of the SOCR scale and the stability of SOCR over time. Nevertheless, taking this study as the first step that it was in evaluating the SOCR scale, the results provide initial tentative support for the SOCR as a valid and reliable instrument, which is suitable for use with older adults. This was, of course, just a short overview of the study, but if you would like to know more, please do see our research article available at this link. And thank you very much for listening. And we'll take the questions at the very end altogether.
Thank you very much, Shauna, for this very interesting new conceptualization of sense of coherence. I see we have several questions. What I'll do is I'll post a smiley to mark that we're over with this one and write Igor's name, and then we know which question relates to whom. And Igor, I'll hand over to you for your presentation.
Thank you very much. My name is Igor Portoghese from the University of Cagliari, Italy. I'm an organizational psychologist, but I'm a researcher in occupational medicine. And here, okay, I hope you. Let me see if you see my presentation.
We can see your presentation, but you still want to maximize your slide. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Since its development 4 decades ago, the sense of coherence concept has been widely adopted within the healthcare research, and its scale has continued to receive increased attention and using in the field of salutogenesis. Antonovsky defined the SOC concept as a global orientation that expresses the extent to which one has a pervasive, enduring, though dynamic feeling of confidence. And he proposed, he theorized that SOC is comprised by 3 distinct facets, comprehensibility, meaningfulness, and manageability. Following this definition, Antonovsky developed a self-rating scale, the orientation to life questionnaire, to measure SOC using the facet design. And the SOC so contains items that are aimed to measure comprehensibility, meaningfulness, and manageability. However, Antonovsky intended that the SOC scales, both SOC 29 and SOC 13, be scored with a single total score and not component scores. In this sense, researchers are not allowed to use a different measure for every component of the SOC, but he said we have to use the SOC measure as unidimensional. But in the last 20 years, the psychometric properties of the SOC 13 scale have been systematically reviewed, and there is a general agreement in the research literature that the SOC scale has three important point. It's a reliable measure, it's a valid measure, but the factorial structure of the scale is not clear. And recently, Erickson and Mittelmark summarized that the structure of the SOC is complex. Two of the most important structural solution found in literature are a correlated three-factor model where items are assigned to each factors defined by Antonovsky, and a second order factor where a global factor as SOC explain the three dimensions of SOC. However, both measures have shown a better field than the one solution as hypothesized by Antonovsky, suggesting that the SOC measure is not unidimensional. For this reason, the highly contrasting results obtained in the literature suggest the need to further explore the underlying structure of the SOC 13, as this measure is designed to assess at the same time a single overarching construct, but okay, considering the existence of items that also tap in three different dimensions. For this reason, we adopted a different perspective, a different framework, the bifactor exploratory structural equation model framework, and the aim of our study was using the bifactor modeling, applying the ESEM framework at the measurement of the SOC 13 in Italian sample, ensuring the unidimensional of the SOC 13. We tested and we contrasted the unidimensional solution against five models. The first order were items, the first order CFA, where items were allowed to define their a priori factor, but not cross-loading was allowed. A second order, the model two, is the second order CFA, where the three component of SOC converge into a second order latent factor of SOC. The third model is the bifactor CFA, where all items were allowed to define at the same time a general factor, okay, the global SOC, and a priori specific factors, so the compressibility, main inference, and manageability, but not allowing for in cross-loading. The model four is a first order ESEM, where items were allowed to define their a priori factor and cross-loading was allowed. Finally, the bifactor ESEM was a solution where items define a one general factor and a three specific a priori factors, and a cross-loading was allowed. We considered many model fit indices, and the most important indices in evaluating the bifactor solution was considered the explain common variance for the general factor, the individual item ECV, and the percentage of uncontaminated correlations. In general, those indices helps researchers in define if the structure of the SOC is unidimensional enough to warrant the use of a total score. results from our study. Okay, we collected data from 811 Italian adults and checking the results from the table one, we can see that the solution theorized by Antonovsky and both the three-factor CFA and the second-order CFA, the most common structures we can find in literature, demonstrated inadequate fit. Furthermore, the second-order CFA, we were not able to find indices because this model didn't converge. Okay, in contrast, the ESEM and the bifactor ESEM provided excellent representation to the data, and the information criteria supported the fit of the bifactor solution, okay? The bifactor ESEM solution with the better indices, okay? After that, we were able in first step to say that the bifactor ESEM solution showed the presence of a global SOC factor that is relatively well defined by most items. You can see the cross loading on the left and the definition, the factor loading of each item on global solution. But when we inspected the specific factors, factor loadings, we found that the three dimensions of SOC were relatively fair defined by most items, suggesting that these three specific factors retain very low specificity over and above the explained by the global SOC. Furthermore, the most important solution is that the bifactor ESEM model confirmed the existence of cross-loading items. For example, you can see the items 2 and 3 of comprehensibility loaded on meaningfulness and manageability dimensions. Okay, that's a cross-loading. When we inspected the indices about the bifactor solution, we found that no one of the indices considered were greater than the respective threshold. For example, the ECV was below the 0.70 threshold. The average item ACV showed a low, but not too low solution. And the PUC was very low. So our results showed that only 5 items were able to specify the SOC 13 as a unidimensional. You can see the 5 items here and show with the item ECV greater than the lower cutoff, because the higher cutoff is 0.85. Our findings provide more information concerning the dimensionality of the Italian version of the SOC 13, suggesting that the model is not is a unidimensional instrument, okay? Considering SOC 13 as a unidimensional instrument will lead to some measurement parameter bias, and then highlighting some risk interpreting the SOC 13 as a primarily unidimensional. Okay, our results provide clear evidence that SOC 13 items were found to reflect a combination of one global SOC solution and a three more specific dimensions, but characterized by cross loadings. Even though a global dimension of SOC exists, the global factor and only 5 items explains the existence of this factor, the SOC 13 cannot be simplistically considered to be a unidimensional measure, as it also taps into meaningful specific dimension that cannot adequately be explained by global levels of SOC. Finally, A future aim could be to consider these five items as a starting point for a new validation of the SOC. Thank you for your attention and sorry for the delay.
Thank you very much, Igor, for this dive into the structure of the SOC scale or the SOC construct, actually. This actually ties in, I'll just share this in the chat. This ties in very nicely with my own research, which I will be presenting next. And if you have any questions for Igor still, I already put my name in, but then just add an at Igor or something like that or in brackets so that we know who the question is for, if you still want to ask any questions about his research. And it ties in nicely with my own research because I looked into work-related sense of coherence and actually used this three-dimensional assessment tool for that as well. So I looked into the relationship between resourceful working conditions, general and work-related sense of coherence, together with my colleagues Gregor Jenny and Georg Bauer at the University of Zurich. And where did we start? So as we've already talked about, and as you are all well aware, the sense of coherence is characterized by these three dimensions that Igor also already pointed out, which are the perceived comprehensibility, manageability, and meaningfulness of one's life. And research has illustrated a substantial interplay between the work setting and the content, the importance of settings has been talked about several times this morning already in the conference. So substantial interplay between the work setting and sense of coherence in various directions. So for example, people with high sense of general coherence have been found to be less affected by stresses in the workplace, to experience less emotional exhaustion, less burnout, fewer stress symptoms. But also the other way around, work has been found to have an influence onto general sense of coherence. And as a result to this close interplay between work and sense of coherence, Georg Bauer and Gregor Jenny have already in 2007 presented this conceptualization of work-related sense of coherence, which they describe as being more immediately related to and responsive to changes in the working environment. And of course, this also makes it potentially suitable to assess changes in the working environment, for example, after an intervention. Oops, why is this not moving forward? I hope you can see my next slide. So we already knew quite a few things about the relationship between work-related sense of coherence and general sense of coherence, or I should say we knew a little bit about it, and there was a whole lot more that we wanted to find out. We knew that job resources influence the work-related sense of coherence, and we also knew that job resources influence general sense of coherence and also vice versa. But the question for us was, well, what actually happens here between work-related and general sense of coherence? And the questions we wanted to answer was, do job resources contribute to work-related sense of coherence in a longitudinal study? Because we had already looked at that cross-sectionally, but not yet answered this longitudinally. Then does work-related sense of coherence contribute to general sense of coherence? So does viewing your work as comprehensible, manageable, and meaningful contribute to also viewing your life overall this way? Or is it rather the other way around, that if you view your life in a coherent manner, you also view your work in a coherent manner? And both seems logical to some extent. And then also, does work-related sense of coherence contribute to more job resources. So for example, if I view my work as manageable and meaningful and comprehensible, then maybe I have more energy, which I can then invest into building good relationships with my coworkers, which then allows me to build more social resources, for example, which then again could contribute to better work-related sense of coherence. So basically the question was, which way around do these relationships actually run? What we did was we looked at online panel data from 941 participants living in Switzerland, Germany, and Austria. These were people from age 18 upwards, I think up to 65, working in all kinds of different industries with and without leadership responsibilities. So a pretty broad sample. And we conducted three waves of data collection, which were spaced 3 months apart. And the measures we assessed were the work SOC scale, which you see the items of at the bottom here. And it does not illustrate this directly on this image, but we use this as a three-dimensional scale indicating comprehensibility, manageability, and meaningfulness at work. And obviously it uses these 9 adjective pairs, which people rate on a 7-point scale. And then we also administered the SOC L9 scale, which, like it says, is a 9-item scale of general sense of coherence, and also 5 job resources being control, role, support from colleagues, support from supervisor, and then the last one being variety and possibilities for development. And I used structural equation modeling to analyze the data. The beauty of structural equation modeling, if you're familiar with it, is that it allows you to tease apart the stable parts of a relationship between two variables from the variable part. So it makes it uniquely suited for analyzing longitudinal data, since you don't just have the overall association, but you can actually see the variable part in how one variable influences another. And if we start at the bottom there, we see the 3 measurement points of sense of coherence, so SOC 1, 2, and 3, which is highly stable. In the next row in the middle, we see work-related sense of coherence at the 3 time points. And then at the top, job resources at the 3 time points, which is a whole lot less stable, and also work-related sense of coherence, which is not as stable. So what did this, so what did we find? First of all, if you take a look at the image, you will see that actually every single relationship was significant. Now, given a sample of 941 people, one would assume a lot of relationships to become significant, but then again, a structural equation model has so many estimated parameters that you need a very large sample to begin with to actually be able to make sound statistical analyses. So we found that job resources at time 1 do predict work-related sense of coherence at time 2 and also from time 2 to 3. We found that work-related sense of coherence does predict general sense of coherence 3 months later, although the effect here is quite small but still significant. We found that general sense of coherence predicts work-related sense of coherence 3 months later, also again significant, but also a rather small effect. And we found that work-related sense of coherence predicts job resources 3 months later, highly significant and also a very substantial effect. And if we look at the top half of this image, we see that the mutual relationships between job resources and work-related sense of coherence were really quite strong, whereas the relationships between work-related and general sense of coherence were much weaker. And of course, we also found this high stability for SOC, which was much more stable than work SOC. So what this shows us is that we weren't able to make a large impact on general sense of coherence. But then again, if we think about the time frame, which was 3 months, this was probably to be expected. But we did see a substantial impact on general sense of coherence. But because the effects run in both directions, this also carries the potential for upwards or downward spirals. Now, this is a session about measurements. So what does this tell us about measurement? We were able to show with longitudinal data that work-related SOC is less stable and more sensitive to changes in the working environment in this case than general SOC. And this also makes it a very suitable approach to measure the effects of changes in an environment. So an intervention, in our case, it could be changes in the work situation, but one could also speculate that something similar might be happening in other contexts where we are looking at influences onto SOC, but the general sense of coherence may not be as quickly affected, and maybe looking at a more domain-specific operationalization of sense of coherence may actually show that an impact was achieved when it's not yet showing in the general sense of coherence. So thank you very much. This was it for my presentation. And I will now hand over to Craig. Oh, actually we're seeing Craig's video and Shauna is going to start the video.
Yeah, I'm going to.
You're in charge, Shauna. You're me.
I'm Craig today. Let me know, can everyone see the video? It should just be black at the moment. You should see Craig on the right-hand side here.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay, I'm going to get started and then mute me.
Hi. Thank you for inviting me to the 6th International Conference on Studiogenesis, talking about how to move towards thriving societies. I'm Craig Becker from East Carolina University in the U.S., and one of the topics you talked about or want to discuss is how to advance the concept of sense coherence beyond the individual. So I'm looking at how we can measure sense coherence model using the Salutogenic Wellness Promotion Scale. Now, Antonovsky, of course, had the question, what explains movement towards health and the health ease, disease continuum? Now, this wasn't just getting rid of problems to me. This was really about how we're going to create great health, not just not sick, functioning better than we would otherwise, without necessarily not just back to where we were, but better. Now, of course, Antonovsky's suggestion was to increase sense coherence. He said there were three dependent variables, now, which was meaningfulness, manageability, and comprehensibility. Now, using those dependent variables means that we would have an intervention designed to make life more meaningful, life more manageable, and life more comprehensible, which suggests that sense coherence can be altered, it can be improved, it can be changed based on that, or it could get worse, depending on your life experiences. So this for him was what answered the salutogenic question, was that idea of sense coherence and much of what he did, and did great work with it. Now, his answer, meaningfulness, manageability, and comprehensibility, was proven in time. It showed in these studies that as you have a higher sense coherence, you have better health. However, the issue with this was it was a one-factor solution. It had three content areas, but it means that they were somewhat redundant, or they weren't adding specifically to it, or how we could make meaningless manageability and comprehensibility manipulate it more. Now, in the article that was recently published in 2019, Future Directions for the Concept of Salutogenesis, it suggested, it said, it's life experiences that shape sense coherence. We should measure those life experiences and specifically do some unique sense of coherence research. And that's a lot of what this presentation is about. What I'd like to suggest is the Salutogenic Wellness Promotion Scale, which has been validated, measures engagement in healthy life. And it was designed specifically for salutogenic lifestyles. It, however, has seven unique dimensions. Now, this is statistical analysis that shows their unique dimensions, and they separately contribute or have separate factors that make a difference. Now, statistical analysis, so far as I know, has not shown that to be true for meaningfulness, manageability, and comprehensibility in sense of coherence, which doesn't take away from it. It's just a different model. So with this SWPS, what it shows is that there are social dimensions, social factors we can do to increase outcomes, emotional actions to take, vocational, what relates to our either daily life or work life, spiritual life, understanding our connection to everybody, intellectual, increasing our intellectual capacity, environmental actions, and physical actions we can do to make a difference in health. And all the studies that I've done so far have shown that as we increase the salutogenic loss proportion scale scoring, or the more we engage in lifestyle behaviors that's measured by the SOPS, the better our health. Now, they're unique dimensions. For instance, some of these studies have shown that if we can focus on emotional, physical, and social engagement, those things will predict increased health status, which makes sense when the World Health Organization's definition of health is physical, mental, and social well-being, the presence of those factors, not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. So if we can design interventions to improve emotional, physical, and social engagement, we get better health status. Other studies have also shown that vocational engagement, or things that lead to things at work or in life that are inspired and desirable and things you want to do in life, that what that tells us is we get better performance. The studies have shown in the research that students that do this have better GPAs or grade point averages, and those at work that engage in those activities perform better at work, whatever the right way they can perform that is done. So how can this help? What are we going to do? Well, I'm proposing that the salutogenic loss proportion scales can help us increase the sense of coherence by knowing which factors to focus on or intervene on if meaningfulness, manageability, and comprehensibility are dependent variables. SOPS dimensions can tell us how to intervene to increase those dependent variables. Because we know that as you increase those dimensions, we increase health. So how might we do this? Well, how can we increase sense coherence is maybe use both the salutogenic loss proportion scale and the sense coherence to study health. Then we think about what's the relationship between the SOPS and the sense coherence? Which factors are related? Specifically what I'm talking about. Now the seven dimensions of the SOPS are on the left, and then the SOC dimensions are here on the right. So which of these dimensions are most influential on each of those dimensions? How does that work? Which factors or which motions or action life experiences would we be most engaged with if we want to change and improve meaningfulness, manageability, and comprehensibility? Of course, I don't know right now. I'm not sure. So we'd have to do some research. Research from this would help us guide improvement. We'd understand which life experiences are fruitful and beneficial towards improving those dimensions, which we know is beneficial for improving health and well-being. And we use that data to create an environment that makes those behaviors the default, generate life experiences. Somewhat like Steve Jobs has designed Apple, the late Steve Jobs designed Apple, so they would have serendipitous interactions between people that could generate creative outcomes. And it's shown that it's been really beneficial to promote those beneficial life experiences. So that's how we move beyond the individual. We create an environment, we design the environment such that there's going to be default interactions between people and experiences, life experiences that are more likely to happen than they would happen otherwise. How do we create an environment that's going to give them those choices, that's going to give them that option to be the most likely option to happen? It's going on right now in the United States, but it's been inspired by Henk Obik from the Netherlands, who redesigned the Netherlands such that they could live with being under sea level, but still have an even better quality of life there in the United States. So the focus for this approach for rebuild by design is that we think about the outcomes. How do we design an environment such that those behaviors that we want them most likely to engage in are more likely, which would be chronic wellness. Now, chronic wellness is the persistent positive conditions that are enabled through health-causing actions. But those health-causing actions need to be somewhat nudged or more likely to engage in. And if we design the environment so it's easier for them to engage in those behaviors that can increase meaningfulness, manageability, and comprehensibility, then the likely result would be that, which is, I believe, the research for how do we design an environment so that's going to happen. Now, of course, time changes. Things change. People change. Situations change. I mean, think of COVID. All this stuff happens on a regular basis. So we need to keep up and we need to continually adjust and adapt to the changing times and the changing situations to understand what is needed to make the best behaviors more likely. Now the behaviors really don't change so much, but how we make it likely for them to engage in those behaviors has to happen. So as that happens, what I'm suggesting is that there's a short version of the SWPS, which is just a 7-item scale, that can tell us if something's going on. How do we keep them engaging in those life experiences that can increase sense coherence? So we're going to keep rebuilding the environment so that it makes it more likely for them to engage in those chronic wellness activities that would increase meaningfulness, manageability, and comprehensibility that should result in a better outcomes. Now I need some help. Let's work together and do some of these studies with the environment, and we can determine if this makes sense and if this is possible. That's my proposal. Thank you for listening. Let me know if you have any questions.
Thank you, Craig, or thank you, Craig, from a few days ago for this presentation.
There's all Shauna.
I'm sorry?
There's all Shauna.
Yeah, she's there. Thank you for this interesting and this proposal and this collaboration proposal on identifying life domains where we can best tackle well-being and impact on the environment. I would now like to hand over to our last presenter, which is Clara Tarko.
Okay, thank you very much. Can you see it?
Yes.
The presentation, okay. I'm really happy about Craig's presentation because I have a feeling that when great minds meet, it comes into a very good good event. So I feel, as you will see, that what Craig had, this theoretical idea, we already had a measurement on it. So let me show you what we were working at. So dear ladies and gentlemen, I'm really happy to be able to present here at the 6th International Congress on Salutogenesis. I'm Clara Tarko from the University of Szeged, U.S. Jula Faculty of Education, Institute of Applied Health Sciences and Health Promotion. My co-authors are Professor Zsuzsanna Benkő, Professor Emerita, who is also here to get today with us, and Dr. László Lippai, who is also a professor at my institute. Our institute is 25 years old, founded in 1995. Our work rests on two pillars, education and research. We educate health promoter professionals on different levels like bachelor, master, postgraduate, or PhD level. And our focal points are health education, health promotion, mental health promotion, minority health promotion, and lifestyle. The theoretical foundations, multidisciplinarity, as well as the utilization of research results are of key importance behind our education. There are two health theories that are the central elements of how we think about health, and that are the holistic health theory and Aaron Antonovsky's salutogenic theory. As I already mentioned, multidisciplinarity is a key element in our work, meaning that health promoters are educated by sociologists, psychologists, medical experts, educators, sports experts, musicians, and so on. Aaron Antonovsky himself was a multidisciplinary thinker, professional, whose work exercised a huge effect on our thinking. In our pursuit in understanding the factors influencing our health, the center of our research activity were mainly healthy lifestyle, with a focus on tradition and modernity, and the mental health of the adult population. By and by, the interweaving areas of education and research led us to crop up with a new basic research idea, namely how these two very important health theories interact and define our health opportunities. Aaron Antonovsky's salutogenic theory doesn't need any introduction for this special audience. We have used the 29 questions variation of his orientation to life questionnaire and translated it into Hungarian and validated it on a Hungarian sample with the permission of Professor Avishai Antonovsky. With the help of this questionnaire, we measured the sense of coherence of the participants and its subscales such as comprehensibility, manageability, and meaningfulness. The other theory we used is the holistic health concept, where health is depicted as the complexity of physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, social, and societal dimensions. Based on the previously mentioned two theories, we worked out our new research titled Lifestyle Research based on the holistic health concept and its connections with Antonovsky's sense of coherence, in the Szeged-Csanád Diocese, and we started this research in 2018. This research is an integral part of our health promotion, health education networking in the diocese itself. And the sample was selected from among the adult population living in the diocese and connected to the educational institutes of the area, like kindergarten educators, teachers, non-teaching staff, parents, grandparents, and other relatives of the children and the pupils. As a consequence of this sampling method, women and those with a higher education degree were overrepresented in our sample. 97.2% of our sample members were below 65 years old, 59.6% lived in towns, 40.4% lived in bigger or smaller villages, and 93.4% were active in the labor market. We used a structured assisted questionnaire interview with nationally and internationally validated questions grouped around the six dimensions of health and the SOC questionnaire. We have used the one-way ANOVA to determine whether the difference in the SOC mean of the groups formed in each health dimension was significant. Furthermore, we used an ETA square test with ANOVA data to look at the strength of the effect, the explanatory power of the given health dimension on SOC. You can see from the table that the explanatory power of the emotional health dimension was the strongest on the sense of coherence with 20%. In the rest of our presentation, I would like to highlight three dimensions, namely the physical, the emotional, and the spiritual one. Looking at the connection of the physical health dimension to Antonovsky's sense of coherence was very interesting to us, as Antonovsky himself did not build physical health into his model. We have created a physical health index from our questionnaire items, referring to nutrition, physical exercise, alcohol drinking, and smoking. The minimum value of this index was 0.41. The maximum value was 4.55. The index was significantly higher for women than men, and significantly higher for those with a higher education degree. We have explored the connection between this index and their subjectively evaluated physical health, which showed a significant linear relationship, meaning those who have considered themselves physically more healthy turned out to be more healthy on the objective physical scale as well. Looking at the Pearson's correlation between the physical health index and the sense of coherence value, we obtained a significant, weak, and positive correlation, meaning those with a better physical health have a higher sense of coherence. The correlation was a bit stronger with the meaningfulness subfactor, which we have learned from the previous sessions is the most important component of SOC. Emotional health is defined as the ability to recognize emotions such as fear, joy, grief, and anger, and to express such emotions appropriately. Emotional or affective health also means coping with stress, tension, depression, and anxiety. Even with a high level of emotional health, we may have negative, unpleasant emotions, but we can keep their experiencing under control. To measure emotional health, we use the WHO Well-Being Index total score and certain factors of the 22 items ways of coping questionnaire, such as the emotionally motivated action and the searching for emotional balance. The minimum value of the emotional health index created so was 9, and the maximum value was 31. We have created three categories from this index called worse than average, average, and better than average emotional health. You can clearly see that the mean value of the sense of coherence score was the highest in case of the better than average category and the lowest in case of the worse than average emotional health category. The relationship is significant. This means better emotional health goes together with a better sense of coherence. With the help of factor analysis, we have created two factors from the ordinal level items measuring spiritual health. These two factors we called forgiving, loving God or spiritual force, and punishing God or spiritual force. We computed a continuous variable by extracting the punishing spiritual points from the loving spiritual points and obtained an index ranging from minus 1.67 to plus 4. You can see the distribution curve of the index on the present slide. The negative direction means those people who fear God or some other spiritual force, while the positive value is the more strength and support is expected from God or from something else the individual believes in, so it indicates a better spiritual health. There is a weak, significant correlation between the spiritual health index and the sense of coherence score, that is, higher spiritual health goes together with a higher sense of coherence. There is an almost medium strength correlation with the meaningfulness subfactor. We can state that the dimensions of the holistic health concept are consistent with the sense of coherence scale. There is a positive relationship between the individual health dimensions and SOC, meaning better health in all dimensions goes together with a higher SOC. These 10 minutes allowed only for the flashing of some results. We have a rich and interesting data we hope to be able to share with you in other conferences or in publications. Thank you very much for your kind attention.
Thank you very much, Clara, for this presentation on more elaboration on the different dimensions and relationships of sense of coherence. And we will now hand over to Shauna for the discussion. And please move forward. We have several questions already, and move forward posting more if you have any more also.
Yeah, thank you very much, Sylvia. And also thank you to all the presenters and for everyone who asked questions. If you do have more, please feel free to put them into the chat or just raise your hand or turn on your video, whatever you prefer. We'll start maybe with a question for Clara, since you just presented, maybe it makes more sense to start with your data. And it is from Ingun Lieber, and they've asked if you could elaborate more on the parameters you used to determine physical health. Was it subjective or diagnosis?
Okay, thank you very much for this question. On the one sense, it was a self-declaration of the own physical health, so how you evaluate your physical health, and there was a scale where they could indicate it. And on the other hand, there were several questions referring to their consumption of several healthy food, like vegetables, fruits, and drinking, and meat, and bread, and so on, and eating when not hungry. And also some questions about the smoking and drinking habits and physical exercises. So out of these different questions, we created an index that is well characterizing the physical status of the participants. And it was in a good match with their self-categorization of how they feel themselves physically. So there were no diagnoses. They gave themselves the data referring to themselves.
We'll follow up with Clara. There's another question here. And by the way, if your question wasn't fully answered or if you want to elaborate more, please jump in and cut me off. It's no problem. So there's another question there for Clara. I'm asking you to elaborate a little bit more about the measure of spiritual health as well.
Okay, thank you. There were several questions, like we asked about their religion or whether they practice their religion. And also there were several statements that were referring to their spiritual experiences. And not only for sensing God, but everything that goes to the spiritual category, whatever the participants believe at. For example, like I feel the presence of God, or I can have a consoling feeling from my religion, or I wish to be more close to God or to something which is a higher ruler, or I feel an inner peace and harmony. So different kinds of such questions were presented, and according to the frequency they chose, like like I feel the presence of this spiritual something every day or several times a day or once a week and so on. So out of these different scales, we created this with the help of factor analysis, these two factors that I mentioned. And it was good because the factors were clearly indicating a different sense of solving problems or sensing the spiritual. Like one is relying more on the protective and kind side, and then the other is reflecting to the fear of something that is above us. And this fear we associated with a negative sense of spiritual health, while the other, when you were relying on this positive spiritual sense, we associated could statistically prove that it goes together with higher health and higher spiritual health.
Thank you. I see that your hand is still up. Do you have a follow-up question or do you want to comment on that?
Which question you mean?
Clara. Only Rodriguez de Oliveira. Sorry if I've butchered your name. I see you have your hand raised. Would you like to follow up?
Yes. My question is in this matter that Dr. Clara is answering. I just would like to ask if this is a quantitative questionnaire or a qualitative interview that she applied to the participants.
It's a qualitative questionnaire. So basically, I can show it only in Hungarian. So it's a questionnaire like this. So participants had to fill it out for themselves. And yeah, it's definitely a qualitative one.
Thank you very much.
Quantitative, sorry.
Perfect, thank you. I'm just going to work my way backwards through the chat, and there is a couple there. I will quickly run through for my questions. Okay, so a question from Ingun Lieber, to comment a bit more on the differences between SOC 2913 and SOC OR. Yeah, of course. So SOC OR, the revised concept, the actual concept and the measurement was revised by Merker and Bahim a few years ago. And they essentially revised the three dimensions and they've kept the manageability part slightly revised, and they replaced comprehensibility and meaningfulness with two factors, balance and reflection. And it's more closely aligned to the SOC 13. There's 13 items in this questionnaire as well. It yields a total score, the same as the SOC 13. But the major difference, I suppose you would say, is that the SOC OR assumes a more neutral position on the predictability of events, and it instead focuses on dealing with this ambiguity of life experiences. So a little less focus on things being predictable, because in my experience, they're certainly not. So this is a bit more like, how do you deal with things when they don't go your way? So yeah, probably the closest to SOC 13, and yeah, a bit more about the ambiguity of life. Sorry, I see we're very close. We've only 5 minutes and I want the chance for other people as well. So I'm going to go through the other questions quite quick for me. And then, of course, if you want to follow up, drop me a message. Craig, you've dropped some questions also for me on SOC about isn't the existing SOC unidimensional? Yes. When it comes to stats, I'm really the worst person, but I'll try my best to explain. Yes, technically it is, it yields a total score. It's we assess total SOC OR, but there is these three dimensions, theoretical dimensions or constructs within it that make up the SOC OR, similar to the SOC. And when we looked at this, we maybe I'll mix two questions about doing the exploratory factor analysis as well. So when it was developed, exploratory factor analysis was conducted in two samples by Merker and Bachem, and I did a confirmatory factor analysis to try and confirm their proposed structure. And I could see these three first order factors with the what we call the subscales, although they're not technically assessed. And then the second order factor of SOC OR that encompassed the whole, all the items. So yes, it is used as a total score. There's a total SOC OR, but in our SOC OR scale, we've also looked at these kind of subscales or constructs that make up SOCR in our research as well. If I could badly explain it like that. And then the last question on mine was, how did we define mental health? Mental health in our study that I presented was defined as the summary component score for mental health based on the SF36 health survey. So it's a weighted assessment of health components, 8 different health components, including things like emotional, social functioning, vitality, different health assessments that make up this scale. And then it's weighted towards mental health, and there's a physical health summary score as well. So that's what we used for a general mental health indicator in our study. That was all the ones for me. Does anyone else have any questions that aren't in the chat? Would anyone like to spontaneously ask something? Alni, yeah? No?
I do.
Yeah, go ahead.
My big issue for almost all these things, and just since you used SF36, almost every single measure that's ever been designed is designed showing that the absence of disease is the presence of health. Mm-hmm. So when I ask about mental health, it's really not the presence of thriving or flourishing, it's the absence of problems. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's not sclerogenesis. That's the absence of pathogenesis. So, and to me, that's the big feature we need to focus on in sclerogenesis, is how are we going to move beyond just not being sick? And that, to me, is what sclerogenesis should. I mean, I never met Aaron. Michelle, I'm sure you have a better picture of that than I do, as she does. But that's always been my point, is that if we're going to create health beyond the absence of disease, then we need to do more than just identify health as the presence or the absence of problems, and the presence of doing better than we could do with that. I'm not sure I'm even saying this well, but doing better than we would do if we weren't sick. Just because we're not sick doesn't mean we're doing great. We're just not doing bad.
Yeah. I agree. Me, also, no, sorry, go on ahead.
No, is that because to me, and a big revelation came to me the other day, it seems like pathogenesis is ideal for acute care. I mean, I'm so glad it's available. And when you're sick and you're in trouble, you need to do quick care. I don't want a salutogenic practitioner coming to me if I have heart problems, you know, but that's chronic care. So long term, we should be thinking about how do we make ourselves well over the long term by constant interactions that lead to better health, which is the point I brought up with Georg earlier this morning, will also somewhat decrease pathogenesis, but decreasing pathogenesis only by accident can increase salutogenesis. They're independent. They're separate factors. And I think until salutogenesis starts to do that, I think it's going to be tough for it to grow into the kind of field it could be.
Yeah.
I don't have a question, I guess. That was just a rant. I'm sorry. That was not a question.
No, that's totally fine. I agree. I really like what you presented as well on the idea of like chronic wellness. As soon as you hear chronic, you assume like, oh no. And then it was chronic wellness. And I thought that's a great idea. And I really like this idea of it, but I also, I work with older adults in aging research as well. And I also, I'm probably not a good fit for here because I also like the idea of like, you can be sick or, you know, have certain chronic illnesses. You can have certain things wrong in some domains of your life and still have other areas that are flourishing or you're doing really well. And you wouldn't necessarily then say that you were, you know, you wouldn't say that this is pathogenic. You would say like, well, you know, I have a chronic condition, but actually I'm really happy, you know, satisfied with my life, you know, things are well social wise. And I really like the idea as well. You can focus on the positives almost and promote the positives to have like a more overall holistic version of well-being. Definitely.
I actually submitted to you a, cause I have an older adult version of my scale and I love that. I have a study coming up that I think I would love to work with you on cause I need to validate it. But, the idea of positive and negative health, they exist at the same time, always. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to look for, I published this in 2011, where both positive and negative health are existing at the same time as to which one is going to be the most predominant, which is going to make the biggest difference. And getting rid of negative health doesn't promote positive health, but positive health can crowd out negative health.
Mm-hmm.
But crowding out bad health doesn't crowd in good health.
Yeah.
It may. But it'd only be by accident. Because I mean, that also means you have to talk as a, it doesn't mean you got any more meaningfulness, doesn't mean you have any more manageability, doesn't mean you have any more comprehensibility, but you still get rid of negative health.
Yeah.
So to me, carry out Antonovsky's work, we need to. Do you think? I mean, what is your scale measure?
So the SOCR, their scale is on. Yeah, it's more about this. Yeah, ability to deal with the positives and negatives. It's a little bit less focused than Antonovsky's on like this predictability, but the idea that like, you know, you can't necessarily tell what's coming. You have to be able to take the good with the bad and have an overall general better well-being. Yeah. I feel like maybe it's a little bit more in the direction of this idea of, I mean, not that SOC is should be totally changed, but I think the SOC or is more in this direction of like, you know, bad and good happen, but it's about how you can manage all of that to have an overall better or okay what level of well-being.
Yeah, I guess the point that I would push further is that balance is not health. Balance is just not bad or not good. It's neutral.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we should aim for and what I call plus three, which you can see in my next presentation. You'll actually get to see that if you see it tomorrow. Because I talk about exceeding expectations. And I was going to share with you the paper I had, because I have a model for positive AI. But anyway, we can talk later. I'm sorry, I'm taking all the time. You guys have other questions?
Well, thank you. That sounds really cool. And yeah, I mean, I know we're a little bit over time. We should finish up. But if anyone has any questions or anything they want to finish up on, please do go ahead. No? Okay, I think that's this. Well, thank you very much. And thanks also to all the other presenters. You did a really good job and your topics were really interesting. And thank you for everyone who asked questions, everyone who attended. And yeah, I hope you guys have a nice rest of the conference and I will see you around.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.